Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. And now, please join me in welcoming my co-host, the Helen Thomas of Education Policy, Stafford Palmieri.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Now, First of all, I do not wear bright pink lipstick, Mike.
Earlier, you were making the case that Helen Thomas was a special kind of gadfly. And you are the editor of the Gadfly.
Bigoted kind.
Well, you defend your own suggestion from earlier. So, okay, well, in which ways do you aspire to be like Helen Thomas?
Helen Thomas asked hard-hitting questions of 10 presidents, basically 10 decades of presidents. I don't remember exactly what the statistics.
10 decades would be a lot of.
She's not that old.
She isn't that old. She always asked very hard-hitting questions. Always sat in the front row. She's a go-getter. She also apparently has some unsavory opinions about Israel. Yeah.
So there you have it. So which unsavory opinions do you have lying in your closet there, Stafford?
No unsavory positions. I believe that if you don't have something nice to say, you shouldn't say anything at all.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Well, so Rick is in Georgia, as in the country. I heard from him today. He's enjoying himself.
He apparently has been sending the happiest emails to his team.
Yeah.
We had lunch with them today, and he is just on cloud nine. He was telling them what he had for lunch the other day.
Yeah. Good food, I guess. He's surprisingly beautiful.
He was the best dressed at an event recently.
What?
I know. I know. Rick is on cloud nine.
Like togas
right now.
And sandals.
Unclear.
Wow, that is saying something. All right, well, good. Well, lots to cover today, so let's get started. Mickey, let's play Pardon the Gadfly.
When the recession hit, private schools saw enrollments decline as families cut back. Now the trend seems to be reversing. Parents are fed up with public school districts' reaction to their budgetary woes, namely making all the wrong cuts, like extracurriculars and electives, instead of the lowest performing teachers. Will this new squeeze incentivize districts to make better budgetary choices?
So first of all, this trend comes from one article in the Chicago Tribune
about
no data to support
no data at all. Okay. And I think, you know, maybe a couple of kids of the anecdotes. But yeah.
The trend seems to be reversed. Yes. Seems conditional tense. Uh-huh.
But okay, so here's the deal, Stafford. So yeah, so there's some places where the schools are, because of the budget cuts, they're raising class sizes, they're getting rid of the young teachers, and some parents are saying, forget about it, I'm going private. Mm-hmm. Think this is going to spread? Will this become an actual trend?
Well, I think it is going to spread, but I don't think it's going to make districts make better choices. I think it's going to make districts call for more money. Yeah. I wish it would make districts make better choices, but if they see enrollments decline more, the districts that is, then they're going to lose more money and they're going to be in even tighter budgetary situation, and they're just going to do what they always do, which is to cry poverty and ask the state to bail them out.
There's always the countervailing trend, of course, which is that as much as the recession hurts school districts, it also hurts families, which makes them less likely to be able to actually afford private schools.
That's right. And there was an Associated Press analysis that showed that with every recession, you know, within a few years, see a decline in private school enrollment. Yeah. This keeps getting back to the same issue over and over and over again, which is in a time of facing budget cuts, there are smart ways to cut and there are dumb ways to cut. And what districts generally do is the dumb ways. And it's not because they're dumb. It's because of politics, right? So they just get rid of the youngest teachers. They raise class size. They get rid of all the programs, extracurricular stuff and art and music that parents actually care about because those are easy line items to cut. But they don't go into the core issue of evaluating which of their teachers could they do without. Or are there ways to replace labor with technology? On and on and on and on. And the question is there anything that can be done to put pressure on them to make those smart cuts, and maybe losing some kids to private school could help along the margins. Okay, topic number two.
Houston Independent School District will start paying kids to show up for Saturday school at 9 of the district's lowest performing high and middle schools starting in the fall. Elementary schools will join the program in fall 2011. Is this a good idea?
Stafford?
It's
just like when we pay you to show up on a Saturday and do some work.
Oh, really? I didn't see that one in my last paycheck. Uh-huh. I think the issue here is that you do have to. Do you just want to pay the kids to show up? Is that really half the battle that we should be paying them for? And I think the answer is yes. I think you'd have to. In Yes, we have all... I'm sorry, I'm being very inarticulate. We have all these programs where we pay kids to do well on tests or mm-hmm. to perform or to get good grades or whatever. Mm-hmm. And this is mere, this has no sort of conditional achievement mm-hmm. side to it. It's just getting the kids to show up. And I think that actually really is half the battle. And in addition to this, which is not mentioned in the prompt here, but the kids get a free breakfast and a free lunch out of it, which is also another enticement. Mm-hmm. So, but if the kids don't show up, then they're not going to do well anyway. So... got to get them there and there.
So, and Roland Fryer says about this program that, look, it may make sense. His research seems to show that kids will respond to incentives to do things within their control. Like, you get more money if you read books. It's harder if you say you get more money if you raise your grades, because that feels a little more tenuous. The other thing is, you know, lots of experience under No Child Left Behind's free tutoring program, supplemental services, that the reason that program didn't work in a lot of cases was that the kids stopped showing up for their tutoring. So the kids got free tutoring, and as a result, you know, their parents weren't paying. There was nobody sort of bought into it as much. And the kids, just after a couple sessions, stopped coming, and so they, and as a result, didn't do better. So, you know, to say, hey, we're going to pay kids to show up so that they can benefit from the tutoring, I don't think it's crazy. Mm-hmm. Topic number three, Mickey.
Jay Matthews wants to ban all celebrity graduation speakers. They don't know the student body, and the audience is so distracted by their stature that their, quote, usual march toward your future paper, quote, is lost on them anyway. Teachers, he says, are a better alternative. Is he right?
Yes. Well, partially. I don't know if teachers are a better alternative, but I did agree with his banning all celebrity speakers. I think they are a waste of time. I mean, they don't know anything about the student body, and everyone's like, look who it is. And they get, I mean, what does the speech say? Nothing.
But. Well, what's interesting is he's not just talking about colleges. I mean, colleges for a long time have been doing this sort of thing. And look, you know, if you're at a big graduation ceremony and thousands of people and, you know, you're trying to, I mean, you know, it's more defensible at a college level because nobody's going to know all the student body anyway. I mean, I went to the University mm-hmm. of Michigan. I graduated in a football stadium. this was not going to be an intimate affair, you know. So Marion Wright Edelman was our graduation speaker. Fine. Though the year before they got Hillary as first lady, I'm a little mad about that. But hey.
I had Tony Blair.
See? Nice. There you go. And you remember this. Mickey, what about you?
I had Bill Clinton.
Nice. See?
Well, see, here's the thing. I couldn't tell you what Tony Blair said.
Yeah.
Well, I could tell you what. I could tell you he was there.
All right. But he's talking about, Jay Matthews is talking about high schools where they're now trying to go after some of these celebrities, particularly in the Washington area where they're trying to get various.
Well, what about Obama's race like at the top graduation speech?
Well, I think that was kind of a neat little reward for performance and stuff like that. Here's the deal. I don't know why teachers should be doing this either. I mean, what about the whole tradition that students give the speeches? Okay. That seems more appropriate to me. Okay, that's all the time we have for Pardon the Gadfly. It is now everyone's favorite, Amber's Research Minute. Amber, welcome back to the show.
How you doing? Thank you.
So, you know, we've been talking around the office how maybe it would be fun if we did some t-shirts, you know, Education Gadfly Show t-shirts. And I think there could be some special ones on the Research Minute.
Yeah, with like my face on it or what exactly would it be?
Well, I don't know.
That
I think
might be a little scary.
Listeners, let's hear from you. What do you want to see on your Research
Minute?
Getting
wrinkles, you know.
Don't worry, we can Photoshop all that stuff.
That's right.
You would look terrific on here.
It's all good. So what you got for us this week?
We have a new evaluation of a performance-based pay program. As some of our listeners may know, the Obama administration recently announced that it would award approximately $437 million in new Teacher Incentive Fund grants this fall. So that brings the total since 2006 to roughly $937 million. So the question today is, are we seeing any bang for our buck yet? This is an experimental study from Mathematica. It examined the impact of the Teacher Advancement Program in 16 Chicago schools in 2008-2009. TAP, for those of you who don't know, is a professional development model. It awards teachers annual bonuses based on their value added to student achievement and their demonstration of key teaching competencies. So it's a small sample. 8 of 16 schools were randomly assigned to a treatment group that began using TAP in 2007. The other 8 were assigned to begin using TAP in 2008. Researchers also created a non-TAP comparison group. Long story short, in the end, neither design showed program impact on student achievement nor on rates of teacher retention. So no impact, no impact, no impact. No big surprise, another randomized study. But a couple caveats here. It's important to keep in mind that the amounts were low for the performance bonuses. We see that a lot here. It was about $2,500, $2,600. The program is still being phased in, so it wasn't completely implemented. And it was a really small sample, so that made it hard to detect impact. Still, personally, $937 million over 5 years. We should be expecting to see a little bit more positive results in the future.
Oof. Amber. Whew. You're tough.
I'm tough. It is a lot of money. And these programs, I mean, just this is my own little soapbox, but these programs are not deconstructing the teacher salary scale. They are just layering on bonus, bonus.
That's right. Because it's just free money from the federal government. That's all they can do. But let me ask you this. I mean, have reformers been trying to sell this? I guess probably we have. They have. We have. I don't know. I was saying this is going to boost student achievement. I mean, isn't the other argument that, look, this is a long-term thing to try to change the signals to the labor market and get different kinds of people interested in teaching in the first place, because people who care about incentives and
but
bonuses.
But I mean, rightly,
a two-year study.
I mean, rightly so. When you interview teachers, I may evaluate one of these things at one time, and they all say, well, when the money's over, it's just going to go back, and they've got a valid point. You know, they're not really seeing this as a long-term sort of incentive.
Right.
They do see it as you're throwing money at us, and you expect us to sort of, you know, bark like a dog and change, and like we weren't previously working hard, and now we're going to work hard. And there's a lot of that sort of cultural stuff to get over. So.
Well, and that's because I think that is always a weak argument for merit pay, is to say, well, this is going to incent teachers to work harder than they would have otherwise. I mean, I think Rick, probably better than anybody else, has made the case for a long time that that's not it. It is really that you're trying to use it to attract a different kind of person into teaching. And that maybe a program like in DC's that is more about fundamentally changing the way teacher pay works, it looks like it's going to be there for the long term, to then see what kind of teachers Michelle Rhee can attract with her you know, new approach. I guess that might be a fair test.
Yeah, I mean, $2,000, I mean, you know, what's that going to do?
Frankly, this makes me think of something you just said like 2 minutes ago about the Roland Fryer program, that incentives work better when it's something that you can really control, like showing up or like making better lesson plans, but something like student achievement is a tenuous thing to measure.
And well, and the good thing about TAP, I mean, of there are a variety of these programs out there, but that one does have a pretty strong evaluation component. Classroom, you know, they give teachers five or six competencies to work on. They come and observe them and sort of give them feedback. So it's actually a strong professional development program, where some of these are just sort of, you know, money for value added.
You know, if we want to do merit pay that raises achievement, I think the most creative one is where the school says, okay, for high-performing teachers, we will give them the option of taking some additional kids, and we'll pay them extra for each additional kid they take. So they have 30 kids instead of 25, and they get extra money. And those five extra kids are going to learn more than they would have if they were in the
other. Yeah, is that being done anywhere?
Yeah, where was it? There was some...
Yeah, there was someplace that
They were doing that within the restrictions of their contract and everything already. And
yeah, that's interesting.
Very creative approach. All right, so what's the song that goes along?
So even though I said that it's too early to say the program's a bust, it's still perfectly fine to feature the 1989 hit by rapper MC called Bust a Move.
Yes!
You saw that coming, didn't you? Come on, Fatso, and just bust a move. Woo-hoo!
Just bust a move. Woo-hoo! You know, Stafford, I finally just got around to seeing The Blind Side the other day. Have you seen this yet?
I have not.
Ah, it's an education-related movie. You should
see it. I know. It looks very
special. There's a scene where they are singing along to Bust a Move.
Oh, well, I will have to look for that. It is on my to-watch movie list.
So. Yes, yes, yes. All right. It is now time to rate that reform. Hello, Janie. Welcome back to the show with Stafford here in the host chair.
I know.
Chair.
I feel like I haven't sat in that chair in a really long time.
Well, I've been here for a while now,
don't
Stafford.
Don't take it personally, Stafford.
You're going to have to be at some point.
All right, Janie, what reform are we rating today? And oh, by the way, just give us like a heads up on the front end. Is this going to be funny or serious?
It's a little serious. It's not like, you know, severely serious. But
okay.
Yeah. No, it's a real reform this week. Don't
this
worry.
This isn't like all the right. teacher that...
No, you don't understand. I prefer funny myself. So. But okay, go ahead. Yeah.
Okay, well, So some schools in Franklin, Indiana, and presumably across the country, this is kind of what you guys were talking about earlier, whether this is actually a trend or not, mm-hmm. are beginning to loosen cell phone restrictions that have been in place since technology first found its way into the hands of our nation's students. The schools are allowing greater leniency of cell phone use in between classes, allowing cell phones in the hall, during lunch, and study hall, etc., in exchange for stricter policies in the classroom. For example, instead of getting a warning, a student would receive 1 hour of detention or Saturday school for every violation. Teachers and students both argue that this will allow them to focus better. Teachers will not be as interrupted as often, and students will not be distracted with a burning desire to check their phones. Administrators also note that for students who have grown up in the age of technology, cell phones are a way of life, and it is students' main vehicle of communication, so it is only fair to allow students the opportunity to learn to be responsible in their cell phone usage, as one day they'll be set free in the real world, and they'll need to have those appropriate cell phone using skills in their college and careers. This is a drastic change from just a few years ago, when many schools didn't allow cell phones on campus during operating hours at all. I think the entire argument underlying this reform is fairly absurd. Students don't need to use cell phones during the day. It's pretty much as simple as that. You know, sometimes it might be convenient for mom to text at 2 p.m. and say Johnny should catch a ride home with the Smiths because she's running late. But conveniency should not outweigh common sense. You know, somehow moms managed for centuries without being in constant communication with their children. So, you know, creating a welcome environment for cell phones in hallways could also lead to serious problems like cheating or even bullying. Plus, schools, you know, shouldn't have to bargain like many of these schools are doing, relaxing rules in one area in order to tighten them in another. If school leaders really wanted to teach students proper cell phone use, they would just simply, you know, make their current rules stricter and just enforce them. So, yes, cell phone use is a rising tide, and it's only going to become more difficult for schools to resist it. But if schools start giving up already, then they're only shooting themselves in the foot. So I give the reform a D.
So I have to tell you, you made a little swipe at me about my not sitting in that chair. I sent Janie that story.
She did, indeed.
In fact, I sent her a lot of her stories.
I know.
This is a funny one. This is a funny one. This is absurd.
Were you talking to me? I'm sorry. I was on my cell phone. I wasn't listening.
I noticed. You and your iPhone.
Really absurd. Let's be clear about this, okay? I would die if I had to go through the day without having my iPhone right near me.
But you're not an 11-year-old child.
Well, sometimes I act like one, but...
Yeah, and what did you do 10 years ago before you had a cell phone? You survived. You did.
I'm just saying.
You've been spoiled by technology, Mike.
But that's fine. Spoiled. I mean, I just think that this is going to be one of these issues where I just don't think a ban on cell phones is going to work. I just don't think it's going to work.
Well, what does a student need it for? You know, they're not writing papers. They don't have deadlines. They're not communicating with important people.
It's like saying that they can't speak while they're in school, right?
What?
I mean, this is a form of an appendage. This is like a way
that
they...
It's not an appendage. You are spoiled by technology. You are good. You're going to teach your son this, aren't you? You're going to corrupt him into cell phone usage from the tender age of 3.
He does not have a cell phone. Don't worry about that. But good. But didn't we hear about this? Who told me about this lately? That there was, you know, somebody has this program where you can find out, like, if there's a fight in one corner and you can go in the other direction. Or if you want to, find the fight and if you want to cheer them on.
So I think that schools shouldn't ban cell phones outright. I think you're right that that's unrealistic. Mm-hmm. But they shouldn't be negotiating with students about how to, like, work it better into the school day. That is absurd. Kids are kids for a reason, and they need to be taught lessons about cell phones. I survived high school and middle school and elementary school without a cell phone. And even in college, it was tucked nicely away into my bag, not distracted the teacher. Kids don't need cell phones. Mm.
I think the solution here is going to be technology again. I think there's going to be some kind of software that just blocks all the cell phones from working once you step inside a classroom. And
I'm
then
pretty
we just
sure have some schools have that, actually.
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
It's not
you
too
can,
hard.
You can make dead zones. That technology already exists.
All right. Dead zones. It was going so well, and you had to mention something sober like dead zones. All right. Thank you, Janie, for bringing that. By the way, I mean, just for the record, I am okay with absurd, funny stories for Rate That Reform. It's okay with me.
Well, I thought this story was absurd. I would have had a Jeff Kooner moment with it.
So. I thought it was absurd. I just didn't think it was, you know, laugh out loud. Absurd is different.
Well, we'll let our listeners decide. That is all the time we have for this week. Till next week.
I'm Stafford Palmieri.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute's Education Gadfly Show, signing off.